to start.
Hi, I'm Neil and welcome to the Crosscast. Wow, what a lot to talk about today. In today's Crosstalk, we will look back on round four of the National Trophy that came from a new venue in Sunderland at which Bruce and I were racing and Matt was on the mic. We are going to review the World Cups that have come from Coxsider and Besançon and the X2O from Kortrijk Urban Cross with its cold and sleety conditions. And then Besançon. Wow, what a men's race that was. And that's not all. In the last round, we look forward to the much anticipated World Masters Championships, as well as Boom and Antwerp, or maybe that should be Antwerp. Bruce, you were back on the UK scene in Sunderland. I think you were smiling, but maybe that may have been your grimace face. How was it, Bruce, to be back?
It was that classic battle with the ill-fated 8% board. Unfortunately, this time I lost out to that game. It was good to be back. I enjoyed the course up there. I thought that was one that I hope we will return to with the National Trophy Series. It flowed really nicely. And I think by the last two laps, I really got into the spirit of it. And I can remember how hard I needed to actually pedal, but the first part of the race was a bit of a shock, I must admit. I don't know how it looked out there from the sidelines, Matt.
You look pretty good, Bruce. I mean, come on. We know you're going to look smooth and it's going to look good, but no, you were going all right. Despite the amount of abuse I gave you every time I saw you, whether you were going to make the 80%.
Every single lap.
there was a running commentary, I will let you into this, between myself and the commissaire team on the radio. Of will Bruce make it or will Bruce not make it? It is now standard training for the commissaire team to work out the 80% rule that they have to pick on a rider. Oddly enough, that's usually you to work out where it's going to be. So, infamy or fame, I'm not sure which it is, Bruce. But no, you look good. I mean, it was a cracking race. And I've got to say, I thought it was one of those sort of races where, because of the speed at the front, if you were in danger of that 80%, you were never going to take it. You know, you weren't going to win that battle because of the speed. And that was in all the races. It was a race that a day that split people apart. Even in Neil's race, same in Neil's. I mean, you know, let's face it, who wants to be up against a competition that's in Neil's race? It's horrendous out there. And we're probably going to see some of them in action over in Ipswich taking stripy jerseys if it all goes to plan for them. But Neil's been racing a lot recently. I noticed his form is being honed. The bikes are being prepped. Make sure you follow him on social media if you want to see pictures of Neil's attention to detail, stroke OCD, on his bike prep. But I think that was probably interrupted at the weekend, wasn't it, Neil? Because I can't imagine you were planning for the conditions we got at the Champs. Someone run off in cold conditions. We had four seasons in one day, pretty much.
Yeah, I was racing at the Midlands Champs, and I loved it. It's all credit to Derby Mercury, who promote that race. It's an amazing course. I've raced it a lot of times, and which does give you an advantage. You know, there's no doubt knowing the course, knowing the lines, really does help. But I love it there. It's really good, and it's, for me, there's just the right amount of grip. Every corner you go in at what you think is the limit, and sometimes you slip out and sometimes someone rails it past you and you think, oh no, I didn't judge the limit right. And after I'd finished my race, I was really, really pleased, and then I got really disappointed when it started to snow for the women's race, because I thought, oh, I wish it snowed for mine. And that women's race, anyone who was there, and for the senior men's race as well, you know, it was a gift. That is your email Christmas card image there already. It was absolutely beautiful weather, I actually felt it really did separate out those people who love those conditions. You know, I don't know if there's such a thing as a cyclocross specialist these days, but let's use the term, the cyclocross specialists who love it when it's like that, have raced in those conditions before, and those people where it was the first time. You know, some people were really not coping with it very well.
Yeah, and I saw Finn, in fact, you talk about good results, Finn actually taking the win over in the men's Southern Championships, was it, now that he's down in Bristol? So the Mansfield family are coming to form. You have been warned if you're going over to Ipswich to the Worlds. Not sure Neil's going to repeat that same level of success, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, well, no, we won't see that. it was good because we will probably talk about it later. But my daughter Lotta, she was racing in Belgium on Saturday and came back and took the elite women's or senior women's win in the East Mids. And then Finn, you know, he's only got one bike down in Bristol with one set of tyres, and he sort of rode over to the race and managed to win it. So it was really nice, and you know, we were on a high, and that was like kind of a real boost at the end of the day when he told us. So yeah, it was good. It's obviously, you know, you're proud of your kids if they have a bad day as well as if they have a good day, but there is a bonus if you come up with two wins in one day.
Makes cleaning all the bikes worthwhile. But the East Midlands wasn't the only race with snow, was it? I mean, we saw the snow actually hit earlier up in Newcastle, up in the northeast for the Northern Champs. So that's basically Yorkshire, the northwest, and the northeast all go together for their regional champs in the Northern Championships. Bit of history in there. And they were on the coast, and I can only imagine how cold it was up there, given that it followed on from a trophy which wasn't particularly warm up there, but some great racing. So I think it's really interesting to see the comparison that a week makes, pretty much.
Yeah, and you know, you saw the photos from all around the country last weekend, and you know, from the people there with these beautiful sunsets and shorts, and through to full-on Arctic conditions up in places like the northeast, which of course was another scenic newcomer to the National Trophy Series this year. We saw another really dominant ride from Spectra's Mella, and an exciting race all the way down the top 10, with the new series leader Manly from Montezuma's finishing second, ahead of, I have to say, really impressive Baker for Impella in third. And Maguire managed to outsprint Carrick Anderson to take the win ahead of Barnes. Carrick Anderson leads the series ahead of Field and Maguire. But you know what? In those races, I thought those third place riders probably rode harder than anybody else on the course. Because in both of them, that rider who finished third, they were... I was going to make a pun here about Barnes Bridge, but Barnes Bridge is quite an obscure little... It's a beautiful bridge in London. But he was bridging time and time again, as was Baker. Oldney Baker was doing the same.
I thought both races were absolutely immense, and it was really interesting because they come at the end of 2 days of racing, and you can see the course developing, and you can see the course building with more riders, with less grass, getting more and more slippy, and we had some really dry conditions that were fast, and it was a real power course, and that meant that as the racing developed, when we went into those last two races, I mean, two very different finishes right at the very pointy end with Amira, and I was lucky enough to chat with Amira after her race. Happy as, I mean, honestly, she probably at the moment could take the world on the way she feels, and it showed. She's just class. She sits there and then she just went, and you could just see she looked and really gone hard, and it was just absolutely impressive to watch. And then you look at the battle behind of the riders trying to stay in there, people like Abby. And she takes the series, something that she's worked for so long. And then you go into the men's, and that finished in a sprint. And I tell you something, Maguire was lucky not to lose that, because he put his arms up in the air and he nearly had that moment where he got rolled on the line on the way in. But you probably know more about the front end than I do, Bruce, because, of course, your team riders were right up there.
That's the beauty of being lap, you see. I did it all up just to be able to watch the last lap of the race, where obviously Dan was just slightly distanced with a puncture. Yeah, it was all tactics. No, I mean, it was really impressive to see Amira, particularly after she'd been up all night because her boyfriend broke his collarbone about riding in the evening the day before the race. No, and so she was actually with him all pretty much all day with into evening with in A&E. So she did pretty well to be able to hold it together with not as much sleep as maybe normally would have been the case. And I thought that course up there made for really interesting riding, particularly as you said, because it was so firm underneath and well draining that when we did have those quite heavy showers sort of in the middle of the day, that top surface polished off in a way that uniquely led to hard underneath and nothing on top. So it really was very, very challenging conditions out there, but it was proved really fast. And I mean, Maguire had they played an absolute blind on the last lap with in the men's race as well, and it was great to watch. Obviously, I'd have preferred Dan to have come on front, but you know, from a riding perspective, yeah, the you know, Carrick Henderson and Maguire were just storming in front. They were really, really impressive.
Definitely, and I thought they made the most of the course. And the series winner has to be good on all surfaces, all terrains, and particularly in cross, we should have that reflected in the series. And we've had tight, we've had twisty, we've had muddy, we've had technical, and we're going to go to Cyclo Park. And I think it was Hugh Williams who said, this is the perfect course prior to Cyclo Park, because Cyclo Park is all about banks, cambers, tech, drops, climbs. It's non-stop. Whereas if you looked at the course, it was power. It was long, putting the throttle open, really nailing it. And I think as a series, it was brilliant. It didn't suit everybody. It would have been, you know, a terrible course for some riders. But then again, for other riders, so is Derby, West Midland, Cyclo Park. What do you think, Neil?
There were people who'd done a course walk the day before, and yeah, and should we say there wasn't a huge amount of enthusiasm coming out of the course. I got on the course and I loved it. It was, as a rider, I thought it was, I really enjoyed it. Actually, I thought it was a great course. It had challenges everywhere. You know, when we arrived, it was this lush, juicy grass. I tell you what, I wish my lawn was as nice as the grass around the back of that course. It was really lush and juicy, and then all that juice came out of the grass and it made those banks really slippery and slick. And there were so many places there where if you were a good rider, confident, you had your setup right, you could make a lot of time, you know, by putting the power in at exactly the right moment, you know, to accelerate into the really steep climbs, to get the corners right. And even, you know, I think from the course walk, it looked like there were kind of two sections and kind of transition between. But actually, it didn't feel like that at all while you were racing it. The course did feel long, I have to say, but there, it didn't feel like you were kind of going from one bit of a course to another, because actually, there was I was delighted to see it was a false flat after I raced, because there was one part of that course that felt so horrible. It was after that gravel climb, before the hurdles, and I could get no rhythm up there. And I thought, what have I done to my legs? This is the worst part of the course. I just feel horrible here. And it was because you'd emptied the tank going up that gravel climb, and then it looked flat when you got to the top, but actually it was still a couple of percent, I think, going up. So that's why it didn't feel good. And then you kind of felt like, oh, but maybe I'm coming back into it again. Actually, it's just because it was like a false descent after, or a tiny descent after that. So you kind of sped up a bit more. So actually, I thought that the course was really, really good. I really enjoyed it. And I think a lot of riders also really enjoyed it. You know, I spoke to a lot of people afterwards, and universal opinion was it was really enjoyable. Really, really good course. It was long, and I don't know quite what would have happened if the weather had... they're happy to dumping a brain.
We wouldn't have needed a lap board with two sets of numbers on. It would have been one for everybody, I think. I thought they did a great job. I mean, Andy Cosgrove, I know Andy from when he was organising the Teesside Mountain Time Trial, you know, two, maybe three decades ago now. And he's been around the sport forever. He's an absolute legend up in the Northeast for the amount of work he does. Great course designer. But I thought Paul Barrett did a really good job bringing in people like Red Bull, So you've got the Rebel truck down at the bottom, and you've got the big shelter, which came in so handy. I mean, that was packed when we got those terrible showers coming down. The event village was busy, and there were a lot of comments about the quality, the variety of catering as well. So there was a lot of choice up there. So I think you wouldn't think that was the first trophy organised by that team.
Absolutely.
And I think for me, that's what I came away with, that you would think that this was maybe generation three or four. And all power to them, that was a really good job.
And I tell you what, Sunday night, it was the entire senior cyclocross community were just railed, and our eyes were wide open with all the Red Bull that got drunk that weekend. So it was good to have them there, particularly making a second focal point on the course on the Sunday. The other thing which I have to give the organisers credit for was it was a sign-on masterpiece. It was just so hassle-free, dead easy. It was the most socially distanced type of sign-on that we've had probably all season, because it was quick and it was spaced out, and there were like four queues, and if you get four queues, then the queue is like one or two people for 3 minutes rather than standing there for 15 minutes in one long queue. What do you think about the series? I understand, Matt, that some of the series are already wrapped up, not the elite men and elite women.
Okay, so in theory, if riders don't ride, if the people who have won four rounds don't ride, don't score points, and somebody puts in an absolute masterpiece, so in the case of Paul Odom and Adrian Lansley or similar, it's virtually impossible for Paul to lose that. It's mathematically possible, but it is not likely. And in all reality, short of a major disaster to an individual rider, they're wrapped up. If the rounds are cancelled from now onwards and we lost two or even lost one, then there's the tradition of losing a round to allow for mechanicals. So at the moment it's 5 out of 6, it could go to 4 out of 5, in which case they're definitely wrapped up now. So although it's possible to go further on and it actually to chase the odds of that happening, well, to be honest, I'll buy a lottery ticket first, because I think there's probably greater odds given the commanding performances we've had. You'd have to see a drop off of form more spectacular than mine when I come off the bike.
Well, and I think in the elite men and women, I think Carrick Anderson has had clearly in form now, but perhaps a little bit less consistency after round one, which didn't go very well. So Ian Field, though, just Mr. Consistent up in second, and we know how he tends to improve as the season goes on, and so in second place, he's still got a chance of winning this again.
Men's and women's categories are wide open, and they are down to points. They're down to individual, literally 1 or 2 points, same in those junior races. It's the races mostly on the Saturdays and that really are sealed up, those series. But the Sunday races, I mean, I can't wait to see what happens. I'm really excited to go down to Gravesend and to Cyclo Park, not just because obviously it's a great course and we know that they're going to do a great job, but because the series is wide open in so many ways, and it's going to depend on who can ride those courses.
And the question, of course, is what the timings will be doing as we move into these later rounds as well. We have, as is our tradition, we change the name of our competition, our timing competition, which is inspired by what is now the X2O series, where we add up all the times through the year. And this show, thanks to a listener suggestion, it is called The Wrath of Kronos, which should do with some dramatic music. If there was The Wrath of Kronos, where we add up the times from each round. Montezuma's leading from Hope and Spectra, with Cirrus Cycle Division in fourth place in overall. And there's a good 14 minutes between Montezuma's in first and Hope in second. And the men's team, there's new entries, Shibden and Abergavenny, which is great to see. Spectra are 10 minutes ahead of Wheelbase, who have moved ahead of Montezuma's.
I think, Neil, these are a work of genius. I hate to say it. I'm not sure about the name. I quite like it. the wrath of Kronos coming to Crosscast near you. But apart from the name, it is absolute genius. The time gaps are really telling about the squads, the riders, and you can actually, if you know the story behind the racing and you've watched the racing and then you start to translate it into that times, it's really telling where they are, both in the men's and the women's. With the men's competition at the moment, I mean, 10 minutes clear sounds a lot for Spectral Wiggle, but just remind me, Neil, what's the penalty for not having a rider right up there?
It's the leader's final lap time plus 25%. So if the leader goes through in 10 minutes, then it'll be 12 and a half minutes penalty.
And
the reason we've done that, actually, is because in X2O, it's 5 minutes. And actually, for most riders, it would then be an advantage if you got 80%. Because if you don't finish, everyone will still get that that time.
And on that basis, let's say a lap at where we were just up in Sunderland, I mean, you're talking like an 8-minute lap, 8-minute lap. So you're talking something in the region of 10-minute penalty. Well, there's only 10 minutes between the first and second teams. There's 2 minutes, well, a minute and a half between Wheelbase and Montezuma's. And again, only like a minute and a half to Montezuma's to hope. Scott need to get another rider in there to push themselves up. But, I mean, yeah. I've got to say, absolutely close. So then in the women's, it looks like it's a long way, 14 minutes, 21 minutes, but that's only a couple of riders not making the cut, a couple of riders not making that finish. And that can all change. So I think in the team competition, it works a treat. And you look at the actual time of racing, and it's huge. It's absolutely huge. You just think, you know, these guys are putting it out there time and time again, and yet we're separated by a matter of minutes or a couple of places. It could make all the difference. I think the next two rounds are going to be really telling.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got, I mean, not only do the next two rounds also keep people, I always felt like Cyclopark keeps people quite close together until the end as well. So it's a course that will reward riders and racers who can leave it towards the end of the race. But I don't know, it's going to be an interesting last of the series, yeah. Isn't it?
And what's nice as well is we get new entries, and if you're a new entry, you don't necessarily come in right at the bottom. Annie Last is a notable new entry, coming in at 20th in the women's competition, and Beth Crumpton is a new entry as well, coming in. So some of the more better known riders. And in the men's competition, it was really interesting, actually. It was certainly Thomas Crapper and Scott Chalmers, Scotty from MagSpeed, and I think it was Sam Kettlewell, I'm not sure if it was him or not, but with a lap to go or two laps to go when they were racing the 80% board, it was really interesting because I noticed Scotty, he was making around that final corner, he was making a move for the finish, expecting the 80% board to come out, and then suddenly the comms were just kind of waving them through. So it's like suddenly, oh, I better save that for the next lap. It was great, and seeing Thomas Crapper come over the line to get into that final lap. I mean, yeah, I've had the pleasure of seeing Thomas and his dad as well, actually, you know, racing for years. Yeah, and obviously they've been part of Abergavenny, who put on some amazing races in the past. And seeing him come over that line, I'm not 100%, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, if you know, but I think that's probably the last time he's managed to finish on the lead lap or at an elite race.
And I think you're right. And I made the comment actually on the day, over the mic, that I think that's his best performance I've seen. Mm. And he's improving really this year. He's a much improved rider, and I can see that, you know, we know he can battle. He's battled for years and years and years and years, and I think he's a rider who is going to be one of these people who in another couple of years time we're going to see actually fighting up a lot closer to the sharp end, and won't just be fighting for the 8%. He's going to be fighting for a top 10, top 5 position potentially, because he's got so much experience, because he's raced from so young. So I thought that was one of the performances of the day for me,
yeah,
to be honest.
I agree.
I think, yeah, in the standings, you've got Corrin at the top, Ian Field 36 seconds behind, Joe Cookham at 54, Rory at 149. Those riders are so close, so close, and anything could change between those riders. I mean, you know, Bruce's comment about Cyclopark being about small gaps between each of the riders, but you rarely see the groups come together because of that compression and expansion in every single technical feature. You don't tend to find a group sprint. You tend to find that it's coming in ones and twos. So although it's only a few seconds, you only need to be eight or nine riders down, and suddenly you're going to be a minute down on the leader, or a minute and a half, and we've seen that so many times there.
Yeah, the whole purpose of what we're doing here is, you know, I've asked the question so many times, I wonder if, and so I thought, well, let's do it, let's try it out. But the whole purpose is that it is going to be different to the points for the series. And of course, it's unsanctioned, it's unofficial, and we're just doing it just for fun. But I think it's really interesting. And the fact is that, you know, if you say you had a sprint finish at the front with Carrick Anderson, Field and Cookham, they all came over on the same chip time, that makes zero difference to the relative. Yeah. And then if Maguire was a minute ahead, then that would bring it right up. You know, so it's quite nice that you would get, even if it's really tight at the front, it will make a lot of difference, or maybe no difference. But maybe we should move on to some sandy racing, a place that I've been to. I think probably all of us have been to, actually, with Coxsider. It delivered some absolutely amazing racing, actually. It was great racing. Easybeat taking the win ahead of Sveik and Ertz. And in the women's race, a well-timed attack secured it. First was Verse, second was Betts, and third was, well, Lucinda Brand. Before that race, Easybeat was saying that he wasn't very confident riding on the sand. But if you would have watched it, he certainly learned quickly, didn't he?
He learned quickly. It was so impressive. I mean, it was a race where you saw very different styles from the riders in the men's race at Coxsider. But you watch him coming up onto some of those banks. He rode smart as well. So when he knew he had to get off, if he knew he couldn't make the top, he made sure he was on the front coming into the sections, and then he would jump off and when he wanted to, and behind he'd stalled everybody so they couldn't come past, because there is just the one line. And then you saw him riding some of the banks and everyone else was running, and you just thought, no, he's got this nailed, he's not confident. That was just sledging. That was just pure gamesmanship. I don't think he's lost confidence in any way, shape or form. I mean, you know, it was a really, really interesting race. Not just on the sand as well. There were plenty of moves being made on the rest of the course. And we always remember the Coxsider for the sand. But actually, those wooded, the muddy sections, the slippy sections, there were people pushing it to the limit because it was so fast. It looked quite dry. But actually, I think a bit like Sunderland, we had that sort of hard parker, then that slippery top surface. So when you hit the limit, it just went. And you saw that time and time again.
People pushing, if we've mentioned it before, there seems to be they seem to have an agreement that contact sport is what we is now the norm for Ertz and Easybeat.
Well, I you know, when I've watched it twice, because I think that there's a couple of moments in there that you think that is probably a beyond the line. And if that was a UK race with some of our UK comms, you would be disqualified. And there's a couple of moments in there. There's one in particular. Preceding lap, the riders had come round. They'd had a bit of a slide. They had a push on a right-hand turn. Mm. And they got into the barriers. They hit the barrier. And they not either knocked it undone or they opened it more. The riders behind came in and came down a bundle. Following lap, you think, okay, what's going to happen here this time? What's going to have happened? They've opened up a big, deep section, a bit of a lay-by in the barriers to give the riders more room. Great. Apart from what was Hess doing, he literally leaned on the rider and tried to put him headfirst into the barriers at about 30 miles an hour. And there is no way that was the racing issue. That was a deliberate act from what I could see. Okay, I'm not on the ground, I'm not stood there, but if a commissaire had seen that during the racing, that would not have got through. And I think that set up not just how the race continued onwards, but right the way through into the following World Cup as well. And I think this could end in tears. Big tears.
It's something we've seen building. For race after
fight,
race.
Fight.
And where are we going to see the fight? I mean, I've heard no rumours or anything from the pits. If you know any, let's spread them. But yeah, I don't know how what's going on behind the scenes with the crews. I mean, they claim that it needs to be good and friendly off the bike.
People.
But there are, you know, there are people. You know, it's true everywhere. You know, there are people that you know, shall we say, be a little bit more difficult to pass than others. And you know, they're fair. But you know, there are some people you know. All you have to do is to say their name from behind and they'll move over. And there are others who, even if you're lapping them for the third time, you know they're going to defend everything. And you just have to work with it. But, occasionally incidents happen, a genuine mistake, and the person's horrified at the result.
I do think, though, I think you've got a good point there, because I think sometimes it gets carried away. And you know what it's like, you could, if you've had a family, if you have brothers, sisters, siblings, you'll know what it's like. It builds. And what starts off as a little bit of a dig in the rib ends up with somebody giving somebody a shove, and then somebody gives somebody else a shove, and then next thing you know, there's a 6-4 plank getting belted around somebody's head. But, you know, it soon gets out of hand. And I think you don't realise that the boundaries are just being pushed a bit too far. And I think that's the same in this. I genuinely don't think that Ertz thinks that, you know, when he puts his 6-foot whatever he is into dinky little Elizabeth and pushes him into a barrier at 30 mile an hour, he's thinking, do you know what, I'm going to just absolutely put him through the slicer here. It's not. Yeah. It's just building and building and building. And I think the problem is, if it does go wrong, it can really, really go wrong. And I think that is what we're going to find happen if we're not careful. And that's going to build, but it shouldn't take away from what was a really, really good race. I mean, it was an amazing race. Arguably not as good as the women's. Although, I think that's debatable, because both races were good.
I agree, yeah. And I think she did it was like a power attack, in my view. You know, she knew she had the power. She went with it. And, yeah, it's. I remember speaking to, he's not a crossrider, but Mike Twelves, actually. I think he's got a world record recently in Masters on the track. Quality rider after taking, I think it was 25 years off, and came back and has started training again, and is now riding at the top level. And he said to me once, I know if I can put out, I can't remember what the number was, 500 watts for 25 seconds or something, then I can win a race. He said, that's all I've got to do. Do that at the right time. And I think that, and if you can do that and the people around you can't, then great. And I think that's what Verst knows she's got in the tank at the moment. You know, she's a good rider. She's able to ride pretty much everything. She's no longer the person who you kind of, your heart goes in your mouth whenever there's a corner with a bit of mud on it. You know, she's built the skills and she's got the power. And if she can hold it for the rest of the season, I think we can see her doing the same as before, of just walking away with pretty much everything.
It was great to see her come back. I have to say, I'm wondering whether it's just getting the timing right this year to come into the Christmas period, and the timing is right and she's been building up, or whether she's just riding the crest of a wave now. Whichever it is, she chose and was smart. It was choices she was making. She wasn't being forced into her positions. I thought it was a very, very smart ride going in, and I thought she rode that 100%. Whether or not that's about having a plan and actually saying, well, I'm going to do really badly in the early races so that I'm going to deliberately come better, I don't think so. Personally, I think she's riding, it's building and it's building this experience, but we'll see.
And if we go back to previous seasons, we were seeing Betsema in that dominant role at this stage of the season, and Betsema I think she's lost a bit of spark this year. I mean, she's still, you know, up there podiuming time after time after time, but the spark isn't quite there, the confidence isn't quite there, and she keeps getting the podiums like she did at Kortrijk, the X2O from Kortrijk, really technical course. We saw Van der Haar have a really bad fall in course practice that put him out of that race and the following day's race in Besançon. But that's a minute ahead, well over a minute ahead of Easterby and Van Kessel. Obviously, the Wrath of Kronos, or the X2O series, makes a big difference in there. And Alvarado now, someone we've not talked about much this year, but certainly coming back to form. She looks like she's definitely targeting the end of the season. She looked like she was there to race it, even though Brand did take the wind, and Betsema was in third.
Yes. He says yes-ish. I agree, Alvarado was looking good. I mean, if you look at her when she was racing in Coxside, she was improving and improving and improving. And I thought she was coming back into the Alvarado that we know. I think she's suffered from a tough mountain bike season where she's maybe not been where she's wanted, and that has knocked her. And she is now starting to come back. Lucinda Brown, we know, can ride everything. Come on. You know, she's the rider, really, the cross rider at the moment, who can ride everything. You can never count her out of any of the races, for sure. But I'm not sure Alvarado's going to continue it on. If you follow her on social media, then there's been a lot of statements about taking a break, getting injured, getting banged about. And I still think she's still maybe a little bit on the fragile side. Not quite. She's certainly not in the same place as a rider like Wurst, who is definitely now coming into confidence. I think Alvarado still looks a little bit shaky.
Yeah. Well, Wurst, it was 2 years since her previous World Cup win. And, you know, remember that year, which Wurst was kind of coming into the end, and it was, can she win the World Champs? And didn't quite. But, interesting how they all are going to develop from now on.
It's that time of the season as well, isn't it, where you get to see where people's timings is really, really crucial. So are you taking that break? This is this weekend, or from this weekend, is traditionally the time when lots of people will then go away and start training again, have a weekend off. But because we've got the return of some major players coming this weekend as well, I think there's a little bit of a sort of almost the politics of cyclocross of, oh well, I've got to keep my name in the ring, so to speak, as we see the return of some of the big riders in the men's categories. And I think form timing is a really, really crucial part of it. And it might be that Celine actually has had some unlucky times throughout the season already, but you know, you only need to be good on a few races in the year to still be remembered as the one who dominated in that year, to be honest.
Yeah.
And the course itself was it was very difficult to set up for. Lotta was there racing there, and there were lots of punctures. We had a lot of reports of those. Lotta punctured as well, and it was this. You have this combination of very slick banks, and then onto tarmac, so which is dirty because of all the mud. And it was actually snowing before the race started. And so it was amazing how the weather affected it, and that incredibly fast roundabout on the tarmac, which apparently was pretty scary going around there at race pace. But yeah, there were lots of punctures. Biggest disappointment of the day was for Lotta was that no one took any photos of her doing that double bunny hop up those steps, because she said that was so much fun, and you just felt really good doing it every lap. it was great. But with Van der Haar not there, he loses 5 minutes, so you know that could be terminal on the series for him.
It's
too close at the moment. There's some years where he could have lost 5 minutes and it wouldn't have been a problem. This year, definitely, it's tight, and I think that's a product of having so many riders fighting for so much after so long in the season. And I think that's why we've seen, despite having so many races, I mean, things like the World Cup with so many races in there, we were speculating early part of the season, would it lose out, would there be missing riders? And you know what, we're still seeing rider after rider after rider doing trips, doing double weekends like Kotrika, then going over to Besançon.
And you've got riders in Kay. Anna Kay, she's kind of had a very quiet ink start to the season. Really good results, though. They're coming on and coming on and coming on. And even though was out at the start of the season, is still seventh in the series overall. Had a great race there. So, again, someone who we could see coming through. later in the year, and Rochette had a good race, maybe giving us a bit of a premonition of what happened the following day. So actually not that far away, in Besançon in France, we had an amazing set of races. Actually, Brand took the win ahead of Rochette, with and she celebrated over the line more than anybody else, I think, with Betsema finishing in third. And then that men's, the men's competition, we had Easerby taking the win ahead of Black Belt ahead of Ryder Tounets in second, and then Pim Ronha coming through in third. So that was pretty amazing. You've got Pim Ronha, he is so young. I can't remember, what is he, 20, 21?
Yeah, 19.
I think. Coming in, getting that podium. You have to say.
Did you see his celebration?
Yeah.
Did you see? Well, I mean, his celebration was so good that Toon had jumped behind the barriers and was cheering him on over the line.
That's a team.
Some great team spirit. That's true team.
Yeah, true team. And it's great when you see teams, work like that. You see it at the happy teams. Cavendish is famous for it, and many others.
Yeah.
And with, if you remember Ron Haar's celebration over the line at the World Champs last year, the best celebration ever, of his kind of swan landing or goose landing. I don't know what it was. Doesn't matter. I don't care what it was. It was amazing. He's a real character. So, welcome Ron Haar to the elite podium. We love it. It's great to see another young rider coming in, and at that age you can only expect them to improve. So how long until he's gonna get a win?
Well, it depends on how fast he goes through the courses in self-defense when he's up racing against the others, I think, because I thought the course was the best of the terrain available. And it shows you what happens when we get cross conditions. I know we talk about this loads, we say, oh, it's proper cross conditions. But it was. It was a really nice mix. It wasn't too muddy. It wasn't too dry. It was just that right consistency of giving you some great racing. And then you look at the banks as they're going up. And for me, it was a race of mistakes. Everyone made mistakes. And yet what you see at this elite level is that the riders, when they make a mistake, they don't care. It's absolutely, it doesn't flicker at all. If you had them wired up onto a brainwave meter, I'm sure Neil's got one somewhere in his lab, you can basically, you could tell, you could wire them up and they'd like make a mistake and they'll be like, already on to the next corner, already on to the next part of the course, already processed, done with the gone, on, moving on. And that's what they do. And that for me was what it was all about. It was about making mistakes. And then it was who made the biggest mistake and who didn't recover well.
That is exactly what we do in the lab. We do a resurgence, actually. But,
And that, for me, is it. That was what made the decisive moves, particularly in that men's race, in those front two. And everybody, I'm sure, if you haven't seen it, go watch it on social media, watch it on the UCI YouTube, the replays, you name it. It's all over the place. The incident that realistically settled the end of the race, because for me, you look at that incident and it's just a big mistake riding in and not getting the line right, and Ertz gets it wrong and doesn't recover, and I think focuses too much then on having made the mistake, and that's it.
But he went
irrespective
that
of course, anything else.
Yeah, that corner though, it was skating. We had pretty much, it was a bit like when you were doing the commentary for the indoor cycling, Matt. We had all these different disciplines all at once. We had kung fu, we had skating, as well as cycling, flower arranging, and everything else. It was every lap the riders were coming down and skidding into it. It was like Scooby Doo. They were kind of coming through and sliding down, and we only saw the lead riders, but I can guarantee there would have been dozens sliding off there further back in the race. And eventually it happened at the front. And did Ertz deliberately try to shove his foot out? Don't know. We will never know. Probably he will never know.
No. I mean, it certainly looked, if you take a superficial look, that he lashed out. Then I looked again, and I must admit, I then thought, well, he's doing what everybody does. Because if you go down, you look around, you look where the competition is, and you try to make it as difficult for them to come past you. Whether you're running with your bike on your shoulder and it happens to go sideways across the entire course or goes in nice little lines so somebody can run past, why would you let somebody come past? I don't think he actually went out to make contact. But it was definitely... there wasn't enough pause in the actual movement of the foot to say it just slipped out.
Yeah, but and then stayed out. At some point, it's going to have to be a ruling, isn't there? At some point, I think the comms, if this carries on, the comms are going to have to at some point sanction a rider to say, okay, this is enough. Because I think it is
a point.
Yeah, it is escalating. And they're so close to that line. Arguably, they've gone over the line already. If they started to complain about it,
I'd rather see a commissaire jump in and actually put a ruling in or disqualify somebody than somebody get hurt, because that could be a career ender. And that, for me, is kind of the point. Why take it to that point? And there's lots of little niggles. And we get Julian fooling about and japes and tomfoolery on things like the podium. But look what happened when, you know, you saw Isabit taking that big pint, that big, you know, gallon of beer, and all of a sudden tips it into his face. You know, it was a jokey tip, or was it? And all those little signs, those little bits of niggle build up.
Yeah.
Even though they may be not badly intended, it just builds and builds and builds. And I think we're coming to a point where we're either going to see action or we're going to see an accident. It can't be long, I don't think. I don't want either to happen, but it's inevitable. It's competitive sport. We've got the world's best riders in action against each other, and the aim is to get in front of somebody else. At some point, that's going to go pear-shaped.
But don't you think that...
That's where we're going.
He kind of lost his head at that point as well, a little bit. I mean, we didn't... it looked to me like he... I know there was a half a lap to go, and it's like, right, that's it, over. If he'd have got up quickly... I don't know if he was able to. He might have dropped a chain. We didn't see it on the coverage. But yeah, if he was able to get up quickly and was right on the back of Easerbeat, then when Easerbeat did the Milnthorpe sliding down the bank trick just before the flower arrangements, we saw a lot of a lot of people did that at Milnthorpe. Yeah, those banks, once you start to go, you're gone. You're going all the way back down the hill. And I think Easerbeat was lucky, actually, there. And I have to say, I hope that he enjoyed the flowers that he went past. I loved those flowers. You kind of got this gravel bit of this road, and then someone went to the trouble of putting these flower arrangements outside. I thought that was amazing.
But you look at that. I think your point's right. He was lucky that there was nobody on his back wheel as he came into that, or even better, 5 or 6 metres behind, because realistically, if you're on his back wheel, you're coming down with him. But if you look at some of the previous times up there, they've gone up almost side by side. There have been different lines taken. Isabit did a couple of genius moves on the inside on the lines, and it would only have taken Etz, and Etz will be kicking himself rather than anybody else, that he wasn't on that wheel and that he hadn't just pushed that a little bit more. Because we all do it. You get in towards the end and you think, oh, if only I had just done or just pushed, because look what's happened in front of me. And I could have made the most of that. And I think for me, that is pretty critical there. That says everything. And he could have been in with a chance of winning. But whether it was his head went down, he thought it was on the limit, did he have that extra? Maybe it just wasn't there. Maybe that's why he made the mistake coming into that bad turn, and it all went wrong, because everything, you know, you're at the end of a race. There's nothing left. You know, you're doing well if you can see straight, never mind actually keep coordinated and stay on the bike.
Although someone who did seem to keep coordinated and focus was Rochette, Magalie Rochette.
Yeah.
She's such a great rider, really good to follow on the social media, really good fun. Well known for wearing a fairy lights on her helmet. It was just over the Christmas period, really getting that result after the cancellation of the Canadian national champs. Went over to Canada, flew back again, and clearly, I think, to be honest, I expect that she was trying to peak her form for the Canadian.
Exactly. a bit of expert planning, wasn't it, really? And if she peaked, well, at least she peaked for a big race.
It's great to see her up there, and she's a character. And we always say sport needs characters, all sports need them. it's what engages people. It's what makes you click on the social media and stay following them, and you know that keeps them in people's faces. It means that you can keep an eye out when they're riding through. You know, you put 100 people in Lycra and you stick them onto the start line, they all kind of look the same. What gives them that character? What means that you're looking for that particular rider? It's character. It's something that engages you. And I think she really has engaged a lot of people. And of course, you know, coming from the continent, you know, across the Atlantic to Europe, she brings another dimension. And I think that's exactly what we need. And great to see her. I mean, it's been a little while since she's been up there, but yeah, you can only see her now continuing with that. But she's such, you know, maybe she'll go off and ride a mountain bike marathon or something in the middle of, or the, you know, Iditarod or something. You know, she's that kind of rider that I wouldn't put it past her just going from a cross race of 45 minutes to a big transcontinental race, because she just loves racing. You can see that in how she rides.
Oh, I can imagine all that, the Iditarod. That's the Husky endurance thing, isn't it? I have no idea. But it just seems that Magali Rochette would be good at that. She's, you know, and it's that thing, you have got the character there. And you look down that top 10 and you've got, it's rammed full of characters. And that's what's really nice about it. Yeah, you've got the Brand, Rochette, Betsema, all of which have their own brand, you know, about themselves. You know, they've got a story behind them. And then you've got Van Empel and Peters, who probably are in the similar type of up-and-comers group are coming through. You've got Honsinger and Van Anroy, Katie Klaus. You know, again, great ride, top 10 for Katie Klaus. You know, someone who we don't talk about very often, but really cracking ride, you know, from the US riders. So you know, right across the board, it was, I thought it was a really exciting race, a good venue. I love the tram. Let's look forwards and see when other people will be back. Let's enter the last ronde. So in the last ronde, we always look forward to what's coming up and what might not be coming up. So where should we begin? Well, let's start closer to home. One of the big races for the UK, if not, you know, dare I say, the biggest race of the year for the UK scene, certainly for us more mature riders. The World Championships coming from Ipswich in, at the time of recording, T-minus 4 days, I think.
Yeah, have you got a calendar at home, Neil, with like T-minus 6, T-minus 5, T-minus 4, like a reverse advent calendar up to the Worlds?
Something like that.
I wouldn't surprise me. I mean, in fact, knowing you, it'll be a time database of a spreadsheet that sort of clicks off seconds and minutes and what you should be doing. Going to Ipswich, going to what has been a national trophy venue at Trinity Park, an organising team that's put on European Championships before, national champs, trophies. I don't know how many years Steve's been organising. I think, in my head, it's something randomly like 20 or 30 years. It's decades and decades. It's way, way long. He knows what he's doing. And the course has already been ridden on. It was the Eastern Champs. We were talking at the start of the show about the regional championships. They've actually had it bedded in. They've actually tested out all the versions and variations of the course to get lap timings in the Eastern Championships. So I think you're going to find a really fast course that rides hard, that's got lots of tech in it, and a course that's going to test the best in the world, if they can get there, because we have had changes to the UK entry requirements, and that is going to impact on the number of international riders who can make it. If you're here already, you're laughing, because if you're not here already, you've got 2 days of quarantine, potentially, before you can get yourself a negative result and come out of quarantine. And that is going to impact on the number of riders. I was speaking to Steve yesterday, just prior to recording this, and it looks to me like that is going to have an impact because of the number of riders who can make it across. Some people will not be able to change their travel plans. However, no matter what, it's going ahead as per UCI instructions. You know, the UCI are adamant this could be the way it goes in the next 20, 30 years. We've got to get used to it and just get as much sport out there as we can.
Mm. Well, I think from the PCR, they're getting the tests done. I mean, there have been companies that have been able to turn them around remarkably quickly. I don't quite know how the labs are doing it, to be quite honest, but they have been able to turn around remarkably quickly because the demand has dropped. Now we've got this sudden change in rules expected, you know, at some point. I don't think it's a surprise to anyone, but suddenly the demand is going to go up, and so I desperately hope that riders are able to make it and get the tests done in time. It'd be dreadful if people can't come because they haven't had a test result.
What you're going to find is there are actually two different test protocols, whether you're inbound or outbound. If you're inbound, apparently it's a different test. It has to be notified to different people. So it has to go to the health authorities, it has to go to the government, it has to be notified, it has to have different markers. It's tested for variants as well on the way in. So apparently, and this is actually just come out in the last couple of days, there is a slightly different test done if you're inbound or outbound, and that means that you are not going to get the same fast turnaround, and most of the companies can't guarantee, in fact, none of the companies will guarantee it's even a 24-hour turnaround from when you do the test. And at the moment, the work that's been done by the organisation, they've talked to the companies, and the companies are saying, as you just said, Neil, we're flooded under. The odds of turning it round, we don't know. We can't tell you. We're certainly not going to try and guarantee it, because we are now suddenly inundated with requests for an inbound test into the UK, and that makes a huge difference. And it's going to impact on people going abroad from the UK coming back, and it's just as it is on these riders coming into the World Championships. What we do know is that we've got world-class riders in the UK who time and time again perform up against the best in the world, and that's true in the Masters. You know, we've always had a strong history going out to Mull, going out and racing in the World's Masters, and we've already got visitors here. I know we've already got the Americans in, we've got a number of people from the States already here, there's quite a lot of people from Europe already in, and the Irish contingent will be coming over anyway because they're not subject to quite the same restrictions as mainland Europe and further abroad. So that's going to make a difference. There's going to be an impact. Will it feel any different? Not sure. I think what Steve has got laid out, the volume of people that are going to be there, and the quality of racing is still going to be just as good. You know, you're not going to see the Nick Craigs, the Paul Oldhams, you know, the riders who are up and racing there who have proved it before going any slower. They're still going to want to win it just as much.
Exactly. And I think, there are people like me, you know, I know one end of a cross bike from another, but, you know, they're with the best will in the world. My goal has been for a long time for the world, it was actually for the Worlds last year, was my goal for several years to try to get up to a form where, first of all, I can get into the Worlds, and secondly, that my criteria was not be rubbish, you know, when I was expecting it to be at Mull. So that would have taken quite a bit of preparation to make sure that I did well at Mull, because it's quite a unique venue. As it turns out, I've raced at Ipswich a lot of times, and actually I get quite well at Ipswich, so that's great for me. But for me, you know, I've been building up to this race for all year as a, you know, weekend warrior. You know, somebody does the national series, you know, has never stood on a national podium, but we never will. I'd take it, but and it's kind of, there's a big gap, but even people like me, you know, it's a big thing for us. We want to do the best we possibly can in this race for our 20th, 30th, 40th, 50th, 60th place, and it's going to be great. I've raced there before several times, and it is flat, that's true, but it's certainly far from, you know, featureless. People that have raced in Ipswich before may have remembered there were a few versions of the course that had very long transitions down some of the, I want to say fire roads, they're not fire roads, but down some of the roads to get through a barn and then back again. That isn't this version of the course. This version of the course, it keeps that the section which is kind of a bit more sandy. It goes through the woods, those loamy woods where what look like berms build up on them. But don't try to ride them like a berm. They just give away underneath you, I know.
Did you try it, Neil?
Yeah.
Did you tell me you tried this?
Oh, yeah, I did. And there's roots underneath them as well.
to make it difficult.
Yeah, I did. There was a big route which was kind of a bunny. I don't know how they're going to go through the woods, but there was a big route that was a bunny hop through a few years ago. And I did dig deep into my bad language store when I was when I looked, I felt very, very rubbish at that moment when tripping over it. It does have a couple of bridges. In previous years, they've used steps at these. I haven't seen any steps. Matt, do you know if there are steps?
I do indeed. We've talked to a couple of people who actually were racing there last weekend, and the reports are the steps are just as big, just as steep, and in fact I know somebody who came a cropper on one of the steps. You've got to treat them with caution because they're just they're a big slab step, long way, a big tread, a big riser. If you get it wrong, in fact this rider actually cracked the helmet open because they slipped on the front, and 6 foot from where they tripped was the edge of the next step, and helmet went straight into it. So you've got to be careful. You do have to treat them with respect. They're not a little nice stinky step at home. These are big, big tough steps with big risers. So one side of one of the bridges, massive steps up, uneven heights, really going to make our riders think about how they do it. Get it wrong when you're tired, it's quite high consequence. You could be losing a lot of places, laid on the floor with a broken bike underneath you if you land on it, or broken bits of you. You don't want to do that. You've got to get up to the top and then a fast run off. So two bridges. You've talked about the tarmac there, Neil. The longest tarmac piece is actually the start finish straight. So that start straight, when you're running off the start, you've got a long section of tarmac. So gridding is going to be done as a random grid. The point that they've made is, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. The start straight, and it's going to make a huge, huge difference to how you rise, because you don't want to necessarily be on the front. And actually, being first on the grid might be a disadvantage, because if it's a headwind up there, you're going to do a lot of work. So going to be interesting to see how that rides out.
I have a really vivid memory of one year when we were at Ipswich, which was when we saw Josie Nelson, I think probably had one of her biggest races, a real breakout race at Ipswich, where she was just moving. I think it was probably the first time she was racing with the elite women. And it was, yeah, we'd seen Josie around all of the disciplines before and was very, very good at that race. And we were seeing her just, you know, running over the hurdles, very, very smooth after coming through this marquee section, through over the hurdles. Obviously Josie is well too young. It'll be another couple of decades until she's ready to race it.
Do you know what, Neil? I think you've got a really good point there, because one rider, do you know who Josie Nelson reminds me of in a riding style and a position on the bike? And that is Kerry Styler, Kerry Skilfillan as well. Very similar riders, very similar riding style, positioned on the bike, the way that they sit, the way they move on the bike is very similar. Kerry Styler is riding in the 40 to 44 age category. Would you put money against her on that course? It's big, it's a power course with enough tech to challenge. Going to be interesting.
Kerry's sure has been up there.
Put money against her anywhere on anything, but particularly on a course like that.
Yeah, and I think seeing Kerry's racing she was at Home Pierpont, wasn't she? Racing Annie Last there. And this isn't so dissimilar, you know, in terms of, you know, it's not got big, long climbs. She was fantastic racing there. The big controversy that I've have been part of discussions of is the hurdles are for the under 55s categories only, which I think means they're not going to be there on Friday, they are going to be there on Saturday. Spitting feathers, I think, is a kind way of describing some of the reactions that I've had from, should we say, some of my teammates in Magspeed.
I think it's a balancing act, isn't it, here? Because we've got to remember that remount onto the bike when you are a vet 75 plus rider is going to be entertaining. If you've got riders who have, and they do, bionic hips, knees, ankles, bits plated up because they've been racing for so long, they've inevitably crashed, you are limiting what they can do jumping on and off. And the chances of injury at the hurdles as you get older, it's there. Now, does that mean you shouldn't have them? Not so sure about that. I'm not sure that would be my choice. Well, maybe have a B line in there that put extra time if you ride round the hurdles, so that you actually have a longer run around the hurdle. So you basically ride round the hurdles, and it takes more time than going over the hurdles. But
it's probably not legal.
Yeah,
is it?
It's out for the day. Yeah. I don't think it's legal. No. Sadly, should but, be.
Yeah. And I don't know why they're taking that. I mean, you can understand reasoning, but to then have the huge step ups on the bridge, which are probably
as big as a hurdle anyway.
Be more than that, so it's going to be just as hard. So I think if you are in that one of those categories, you know, just consider the bridge as being your opportunity to use your hurdling skill, although I don't remember seeing any people in the 55s and overs bunny hopping in the past. If you do,
I was going to say how. Okay, I get it from a point of view. If you can bunny hop the hurdles and people can't, then it's a great thing to do. But how many people are going to bunny hop 40 centimeter hurdles in those older age groups? And how much advantage is it going to make? So it's certainly going to be high risk.
Yeah.
And high consequence if you get it wrong. We see that all the time. We see people coming out of races with either broken bikes or damaged bits of them. So is it really worth it? And then you look at the amount of dismounting there is elsewhere, and you make that point. Mm-hmm. On the bridge, on some of these tech features, there's a set of steps in the technical Land Rover track test track area that's a run up on the steps. So there's more than two. There's two guaranteed places where you have to get off and run no matter how good you are. Therefore, do you need the hurdles at all?
Yeah.
You could argue you don't even need them for the, you know, 30 to 35s.
No. I think there's plenty on that course. There's a lot. Yeah, it's the one where you're not going to lose concentration. I think, yeah, you've got the start finish straight, but that's always the way. That's the whole point of a start finish straight. I mean, the other big racing this coming up over this weekend, we not only see the return of the Vets, you know, a long, long, many, many decades of rivalries being picked up again, but we also see rivalries probably with Van Aert and Pidcock starting their seasons this year. I don't know how they're going to come into form, but we've got the first round of the Van Aert-Pidcock rivalry coming from Boom this weekend. It's a course which is... it's around an amphitheatre. It's not a Roman amphitheatre, but it's kind of imagine that's what it's like, a big space. And effectively, you go... Oh, there's my fire alarm. It'll be my Tuesday test. Come on.
So this, listeners, is where we either see Neil running out of the Crosscast recording at 100 miles an hour because the building's on fire, or it's a test, in which case we'll continue.
It stopped, so let's continue. it's really weather dependent, though, because there's the in and out of that amphitheatre. If it's really slippery, you can see the riders who can ride it every time. It's almost like, yeah, one of those sandy sections where you think, can they make it? And there is an advantage of being able to ride the climbs. So look for the lines, look for people trying to make the climbs, and of course trying to do the 180s at the bottom of them as well. Other thing to look for there is some, you know, sculptures. You know, it's a bit of a cultural journey today, but you know, the sculptures which are a lyre, you know, like every cross course at the moment seems to have an architectural feature, certainly on the National Trophy. Look for the statue, the lying down person. I think that's supposed to be pointing at the stars. It's a very impressive piece. Anyway, we've got Van Aert, Pidcock coming back. Matt, what do you think? Are they going to hit the ground running?
It's so hard to tell, isn't it? I mean, Tom's had a great year. He's had an absolutely standout season. He's saying he wants a title in January, so he can't hit the ground too slow. But you've got a year that he's never done before. And then you've got Wout van Aert, who, again, absolutely standout seasons. Same with Van der Poel when he comes. I wouldn't want to put money on who's going to come out of the blocks quickest. And, to be honest, do you need to? Do you just need to do a couple of quick runs in just to find your feet? And as you have no expectation from your first three or four races, because realistically, what are these guys bothered about? Are they bothered about any other race other than the World Championships?
Yeah, that's true.
And I'd argue no. I'd argue that the entire World Cup, X2O, Super Prestige, are insignificant, irrelevant, training, take your pick. Because I think they are all just about getting the race eye in for that one race of the year at the end of January.
Yeah.
And the rest of it, no. It's nice to get the win, it's confidence building, but it's part of the process. It's not an end in itself.
And I think with the best will in the world, they're, even if they, because they probably could win the X2O, because they'll be 10 minutes down, but they could probably do it. I don't think they're going to want to race to the end of February, not with Spring Classics coming up and their other teams that they're representing. So I really don't know how they're going to go. It's going to be really difficult. I must admit, I do hope that they're not going to be able to bring it to those at the front, but I wouldn't put it past either of them just to ride away. Yeah,
I mean, you know, just pick about the calendar. You've got somebody like Tom Namur, Val di Sole, potentially going to go well at. You look at something like Bal again, maybe Tom, maybe is Bal going to be a race that you're going to see Wout van Aert do well at? I'm not so sure. But then you look at things like you've got Boom, you've got Degum, you've got Zolder. You know, you've a real mix of races coming up. You've got Hoogerheider, you've got Hammer. There's a huge variety of races. There's something for everybody there. And actually, if you put the three calendars of Wout van Aert along with Van der Poel and Pidcock together, it's almost as if they've deliberately waited and waited and waited to put all three together. They've almost looked at each other's calendars and gone, do you know what, guys? We could really make this simple. We'll just race against the cup one of us for a little while, and then we'll wait to hit. And actually, if you look at it, they're only going to meet three times, all three of them in the same race, other than the Worlds. Mm-hmm. And that's if Wout rides the Worlds, because he's talking about he's going to make a decision partway through the season. So,
yeah.
You know, out of all those races that are coming up, only three races are they all due to all be in the same race.
And assuming that they all go ahead, you know, we've got to face facts. We've got things happening as we speak. You know, every few hours, there's another announcement about the new variant. And we just don't know what's going to happen, whether the Christmas races will happen, whether it'll be possible for people to travel over to them. We know already that Antwerp is cancelled for this weekend. Another bit of culture here, you know, the Zaha Hadid, one of my favourite architects, she designed the port building there, beautiful piece of architecture. So we won't get those nice aerial shots of the port. But what do they do? I mean, it's there is a bit of a conspiracy theory behind it, that it's because this is promoted by Galazzo rather than Flanders Classic, who are in charge of the whole World Cup now, if it was Flanders Classic, let's put it around the other way, let's try not to be too conspiracy theorists about this, that if it was Flanders Classics coordinating it, then it would have gone ahead. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I think sometimes some things transcend sport and, you know, national guidelines, etc., being put in. And it's not just this one thing happening in the country. It's not like it's just the cross race. You know, you're talking about Holland shipping, you know, people across the border for intensive care. You've got borders being shut down. In the big picture, in that huge amount of restrictions and changes that are constantly happening, then I don't think, with the best will in the world, that cycling is that important to the powers that be. It's important over there, but it's not that important. And you can find a conspiracy theory in everything. You know, you could put one behind the fact, I know there's just been an announcement, there's no spectators now at the Rüchen World Cup, by the sounds of it. So that sounds like another restriction going in. So, like you say, what's going to be left? Is it a case of getting in early? And are all these riders who are smart hit the season early, got all these big results early, going to actually be laughing all the way to the bank, because they're actually going to be the riders with the highest value. And much as they wouldn't want the season to end that way, they're still going to be the ones who are going to take away the best result if we see things start to minimise on the way through. And I guess at least having so many races, we've got a lot still in, even if we lose a few.
And if we look back and section of the community says that the government's all overreacted because nothing happened, well, that's success, surely. we're in this case, it's a lot better to overreact than to, the results of getting it wrong for this, as we know, is pretty dreadful for individuals and families involved. So, I think we don't know what's going to happen for the rest of the season. We can look at it, we can have a plan. We're already seeing it affecting racing this weekend based on something that we didn't even know about a fortnight ago. So, from World Masters champs right the way through to World Cup. So it's hitting things at that highest level. Hopefully we'll get a bit of certainty as we go forward. But certainly there's no... there might be a conspiracy in the background, but the only conspiracy theory I assign to is that none of the conspiracy theories are real. Dun, dun, dun.
Big conspiracy theory for now. Do you know my take on it all? We love Cross because it's unpredictable.
Yeah.
We love Cross because anything can happen. This is just an added level of unpredictability into an already unpredictable sport. Don't moan about the conditions being unpredictable or results being unpredictable. Do you know what? This is all part of the game now. And guys, let's get on and make the most of it and make the most of every single race, because the racing's amazing.
Yep.
The riders have been doing an amazing job. It's great being at the side of the course when you get the chance, and when you can't, we've got great coverage. So... Mm.
That's true.
What's not to like?
Yeah. And another conspiracy theory, which just to make you feel a bit more comfortable, is the Crosscast t-shirts. They have arrived there and they're being shipped out. I think the first ones are being shipped out today.
Get a t-shirt, go on to gritty.co.uk, grab a shirt, support the Crosscast. The more of those t-shirts that go out, it just helps us cover some of the costs of making sure that we keep on bringing you the Crosscast all the way through the season. So please, guys, dive on there. Great design. I can say that I didn't design it. If I designed it, it looked like a six-year-old with a set of crayons, as it is done by people who know what they're doing. So,
and they will be available at the World Masters Champs. So do come and try to grab them at the Masters Worlds if you're there, or get your order in early on the website. So, as you can probably pick up, we've been well into our final lap now, and we need to wrap things up as we pass the finish line. We had to say farewell to Bruce. He, should we say, got 80%ed today. you can find us on the internet. Matt, where can we find you?
You can find me behind the mic at Ipswich, the national trophies, and all over the place. Also, occasionally on Swift, Facebook, and Instagram, and everywhere else as Matt Payne.
And you can find me at Crosscast Neil. You can find me on most of those places, particularly on Donny Chain Gang most Tuesdays and Thursdays, that Matt also provides commentary for. Great fun, and a lot of cross riders who turn up on that on, something where you can't do kung fu on each other, or if you do, you fall off your turbo. So with that, let's wrap up, and we'll see you on the other side of the tape. Bye.